Hello, in this episode, I'm going to ask the question, what is inside blood? We all know it. When you have a blood nose, catch your finger, or see little drops of blood, we all automatically know what it is and where it is. But in this episode, I'm going to ask what's inside it. Hello, this is Peter Hill Explains, where I ask things scientific, or discuss things scientific. As usual, I'm in cardiac. This is the sort of background story. I'm in cardiac rehab. I'm a teacher, and I've got to get. As a teacher, you have to be able to speak off the top of your head for a long period of time. So this will be just ad-libbing off the top of my head as I remember facts about blood. As a scientist, you're held to a higher standard. So they take you into the classroom and say go, and are very critical, and so you have to prepare ahead of time. So this is my sort of cheating while I'm in cardiac rehab. Now, the other aspect of it is I've had one valve operation. I'm going to have a second one, so I'm just gearing down and reading up about blood, or have looked about blood. So this is having read a bit about it and chasing up, trying to see how the drugs I'm fed go into the blood and how they travel around the place. So it's a very interesting thing to talk about blood. Now, I suppose the first thing we have to think about blood is if you just have a test tube of blood, what will happen? So you collect a test tube of blood and just leave it out. And if you leave it for, I suppose, quarter of an hour, half an hour, what you'll see is the blood will coagulate. It will condense down and form a little clot, so to speak. And that's ideal, because if it's flowing out, you want it to clot and form a little seal. So it's similar to what people nowadays put inside their bike towers as fluid. And so then when it's pushed out a small hole, it goes out and clots. That introduces our first thing. I don't know what the technical term for the clot is, but I do know the term for the liquid which is left behind the clot. So you've got your test tube, say 3 centimeters up, the bottom I suppose 5 millimeters will form a clot. The remaining 2.5 did I say centimeters? I said millimeters. Will be this liquid, this yellowy liquid. It looks a bit like egg white. Just a little bit more runny, and that will be called serum. So I suppose that's an interesting thing to see, that when the blood clots, the liquid left over is called serum. And you may have heard of this, and this basically refers to the liquid part of blood, the water, and a few other proteins, globular proteins, and a few other things left behind when the coagulants and the blood cells get work together. So a serum is the stuff left over when you take out the blood cells and the coagulants. So the coagulants do their work and pull that blood together in a blood clot. And we'll talk a bit more about the blood cells and a bit more when we talk about what they actually do in laboratories. So what they do is they withdraw your blood, and I have this done about once a week at the moment to check my international bleed ratio. So I'm given a standard number. I've got to achieve a bleed rate between 2.5 to 3.5, and that's above people's normal bleed ratio of 1. What it means is that if I cut myself, it should, and it takes a normal person 1 minute to heal, it should take me between 2.5 minutes to 3.5 minutes to heal. And I've got to keep my blood at that ratio, and that's because I've got an artificial heart valve in, and they want my blood to be not thin but anticoagulant. And anticoagulant means it stops forming that plug. So what they do is they get your blood and pour in the top a actual anticoagulant chemical. Now, for me, what happens is they've actually knocked out my ability to make coagulant. But in this, when they collect your blood, they pour in a certain amount of anti coagulant, and then they take this and they put the test tubes, normally several test tubes, so it can be balanced in something called a centrifuge. And what this does, it's like in a fairground, it spins very fast and creates what you call an artificial gravity. That is, there's centripetal acceleration. The tube applies as a force to the entire liquid, a center force, which changes its direction to go in a circle. And so as far as the test tube is concerned, it's providing a countering force against that. And I'm just giving you a physics explanation of it, but if you like, it's like an artificial gravity. So it's as if you took liquid to a very, I suppose, dense iron planet, five times the radius of us, but as small, very strong gravitational field. And what this does is it means that the blood cells, and we're going to have to talk about it, fall downwards, and they fall downwards and it settles, and you get a stratified mixture. The heavier stuff are your red blood cells, and then that goes up to roughly, I suppose a bit more exact, 45% of the height. Then there's a thin layer on top of that of the white blood cells. So this actually looks, I suppose, a bit pinky, not really red. It's a fairly thin layer of the white blood cells and platelets. These are the little plates, so to speak. And so they go in and they start to jam their cells together when there is a bleed. So what's happened here is that the layer above this is reasonably clear, and that's similar to the serum, but that's called blood plasma. So blood plasma is the liquid of the blood, including the coagulants. So, whereas before in your first test tube, your coagulants were in a clot. It's no longer clotting, so the coagulants are in that top layer of blood. And so, as you've guessed it, roughly 55% of your blood is plasma. And so this plasma is very good because the bottom part of your that test tube is full of specific cells, and the non-cell stuff, protein, is above. And so that means that you can scoop that off and give it to someone who's short of blood, and that will go for everybody else. Because the cells, if you put someone else's cells in someone's body, which are not correct, the body can't tell whether they're normal cells there to do a good job or they're an infection. So the body reacts as if it's an infection. So you can actually kill someone if you actually inject that bottom part of their test tube. I think there's one type of blood type where you can take every other type of blood type. But for most people, the blood below, the blood type below, will cause a mismatch and cause you to have a toxic reaction to it. So let's get back to it. The thing that I'm interested in is where the drugs are active in me, or in the plasma, but we'll go. So that's the liquid, and it's 95% water, which is good. Then the rest of the mass is salt and globulin particles. Now, globulin is Latin for sphere, and what I would like you to do is imagine tennis balls. They're basically protein tennis balls. These are long string molecules, which have folded up into a nice little ball. So if you imagine a spring steel wire, which you wind into a ball, and it's actually quite bouncy. It bounces, and they're little tennis balls. That's just as well, because it flows well. And I'll get back onto that quickly if I can, well, pretty soon at the end, because that's where I want to get to by the end of this particular talk. I want to talk about the structure of blood and that globulin, and the most common form of globulin, and the I'll go into this part, but that's the part where all the nutritious aspect of the blood is. There's a lot of nutrition in that, those protein balls. So when Dracula goes to have a drink, he gets a lot of energy from this. He gets his nutrient from other areas, but there's a lot of energy packed in these globulin particles or tennis balls. Now, if we go down the test tube again, that we're at the top of the clear, slightly yellowy plasma. If we go down through, plunge down through the platelet layer and the white cell layer, you come to the red cell layer. And red cells, if you like, the way I think you should imagine them, like big shopping bags full of tennis balls. They're also full of globulins, but these are held in a highly concentrated form and called a red blood cell. And you'll be familiar with the standard donut shape, filled donut shape. There's no hole, it actually connects in the center. And the red blood cell is interesting. It starts life off as a normal cell. It's got all the components in it. It's got the nucleus in the blood cell. So a young blood cell has a nucleus in it. It's got the other factory sites in it. So it's got the Golgi apparatus. It's got the ribosomes. Ribosomes are the little protein factories. And so in a young blood cell starts off almost indistinguishable from any other cell, and what it does is it absorbs nutrients and it actually starts to make itself. Now this is one of the interesting thing, that the blood cell starts up and it absorbs all the components and manufactures itself inside. And what it does is it goes full steam ahead. It knows it's got, I think, a 7-day lifespan, so it doesn't have to do much, just has to hang around as a sack full of these globulin globulin particles. And you'll be familiar with some of them. I'm sure you can think of something globulin, which is in a red blood cell. So you've got this plastic bag. When I say a plastic bag, you think of a plastic bag full of water to start off with. It's all sealed and it's got a nucleus on the inside and it's got these little factories and components about it. It's got this mitochondria, which is an ancient piece of bacteria hanging around. It's slaved, built inside it. And it's in the bone marrow, it produces globulin particles. So it fills itself up into a fairly dense structure of globulin. It's got a cell skeleton, so these are strands of protein going across, holding its shape and giving it a jelly-like consistency inside. So it's got globulin inside, and it fills up with this globulin. It absorbs its ions and builds up, if you can guess it, a important part of the oxygen carrying part of the cell, the hemoglobin. Hemoglobin, there you go. That's a four-part, there's four separate proteins working together, and they can hold together, I think it's four. Allow me a bit of lax, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, and it's got these beautiful iron sites, I've forgotten the sites there. The protein binds or has fleeting chemical connections with an iron molecule. That's Fe, an iron atom. Ligand bonds, I think it is. Ligates. Ligates is the word for bonds. So you've got these proteins, they're shaped, and they actually click together like magnets around this iron molecule. And this is for hemoglobin, and it means that the hemoglobin is very sensitive to oxygen concentration. So when there's a high oxygen concentration, it the oxygen bonds, so four oxygen molecules bond or stick to four areas of the hemoglobin. It's quite fascinating to look at the molecular physics, how the aerovibrational structure of these proteins vibrating actually slow down and capture oxygen molecules. So the hemoglobin has a function with iron in the center. I think it's magnesium in the center or copper in the center. For a whole different life forms have different ions, or this is metal ions that they just select. So you have we've got red blood, but snails and octopuses and mollusks tend to have green blood. If you've ever squished them or dissected them, they drip their blood, go bloop, bloop, and it's green. Sort of quite amazing to see. And you think, look, when I look at red, I'm looking at the iron atom. It's pretty amazing. I'm looking through the see-through lipid layer. This is a double fat layer of plastic bag of your cell. I'm looking through, I'm actually seeing the iron. You can hear it in the background as I'm talking. Sulfur-crested cockatoos eating a fruit tree and a few other bird sounds. But let's get back into it. So if you can imagine your red blood cell is growing, and at this time it's still circular, and what's really happening is that the one thing that viruses absolutely love is a nucleus. There's nothing more than they love in the nucleus, because they go straight into the nucleus and they put in the nucleuses there, almost like a hamburger shop receiving, or which is own self referencing hamburger shop, and that is, it takes orders and sends the orders out to the kitchen to produce proteins. So we'll get into that a little bit later on. And the proteins it does produce inside the bone marrow are the globulins, these circular spherical ball shaped sphere tennis balls. Imagine, I think tennis balls is by far the thing I like most to imagine it like. When you look at it in a large force field, and the way that it behaves, it looks a bit like a tennis ball. So it loves, viruses love a nucleus, and what they realize is that this is the body has evolved over time to say, well, viruses, if you like getting into cells with a nucleus, what we're going to do is we're going to make kamikaze cells and actually destroy the nucleus before we send them out. So your blood cells are living cells. Okay, I think your blood cells still function. They require oxygen and various things. They metabolize and stuff like that. They have all these globulins inside it, but the nucleus, which is the factory inside it, the protein factory, has shut down, and so the viruses can get in if they want, but there's nothing to do. And it's sort of rather good, because if you were a virus which could actually multiply in the nuclear cell, the nucleuses of a primitive blood system, it's fantastic. You hop on board and you're automatically hooked around the complete body. You take the body over in minutes, I'd say, if you could do that. So the body has evolved to remove the nucleus, and having removed the nucleus, the cell structure collapses down, and that's why you get that donut, or one of the reasons that you get the donut shape. So where the viruses don't have a cell nucleus. That's correct. So it's not the viruses, the red blood cells. Now, as I said, there's globulins. There's actually a second type of globulin, which I don't know why people sort of get all fussed about the oxygen getting to you. Of course, the carbon dioxide has to come out, and the carbon dioxide is taken out on another. I'll have to really carbonic hydrolase, I think, from memory. Carbonic hydrolase. Now, carbonic hydrolase is pretty much hemoglobin all over again, but it's got a different function. It's more the proteins around it are enzymes. That is, they promote a general chemical reaction in the blood. To do with carbon dioxide, and they chelate, or they are have got ligand structures with magnesium. I think zinc would be the actual atom. You'll have to check this up on YouTube to check if my YouTube, Wikipedia, or whatever it is you guys use. Just check that I'm still on the money. Yeah, it is zinc, and it collects these proteins around the outside, and these proteins speed up the reaction of water and carbon dioxide. And so what it definitely does is that if you have carbon dioxide, it comes into a region, the blood comes into a region, and if it comes into a region, it reacts with the carbon dioxide and actually pulls the carbon dioxide into the water. Then when it comes to the lungs, it does the reverse process. When there's a low carbon dioxide concentration, it actually releases the carbon dioxide. So the hemoglobin transports the oxygen, and this carbolic hydrolase takes it back again. So there's different transport mechanisms for the carbon dioxide, water itself, and some of the proteins hanging around are good, but the one that things that does the lion's share is this inside the red blood cell. And of course, the major thing which moves the dissolved oxygen at a high rate out is the hemoglobin. So if you've got two globulins in there, and they're in, if you like, plastic, when I say plastic bags, they're sort of, it's like plastic, it's like the slimy, when I say slimy, it's a double fat layer. So the fat layer is repelled by the water, and it's attracted by the fat layer, which is repelled by the water. So you've got sort of like a double bag where it's got water repellent and it squeezes out the water. I'm trying to describe what a cell is. It's a double ligand, a double L. The word, the name escapes me. I'm not a biologist, I'm a physicist, so these words, it's a lipid, a double lipid layer. Sorry, it just has to come to me there. So look, let's pan back again, back out again. We've got two test tubes, one test tube which of blood, and we've just let it clot. That's left a clot and serum. The other test tube, we've put in anticoagulant and we've spun it around, and it's formed a layer. We've worked our cells through the red layer, and there's this thin layer of white blood cells and platelets. Platelets are basically building blocks of girders which lock together when exposed to oxygen to start the clotting process. And so a platelet is there, the first line of defense to actually cut, to seal up a cut. The white blood cells are something else again. I'm pretty sure they do have their nucleus still in them, and white blood cells are big, and they're amazing. And inside they have a skeleton which can grow really quickly, and a white blood cell can actually move, and it's basically the police of your blood, and it can move around and actually see contaminant and actually envelop it and digest it. And so white blood cells are pretty amazing things. They can actually, it's a bit like, I'm trying to think of Terminator 2, I think it is, where the alien, it was liquid metal technology, it was able to go into a liquid and just seep underneath the door and reconstruct the other side. And this is what the white blood cells are here. They keep the blood free of disease, they keep the entire body full of disease. So these fantastic cells, this is this thin layer before we get into the plasma. These cells are fantastic. So they can change shape, narrow right down, squeeze, change the shape, squeeze through gaps in other cells and get out. And I do believe, I'm pretty sure that your white blood cells can actually get out and go outside your tear duct and have a walk around your face and then go back into your body. They are pretty amazing stuff. And they basically know to kill by feeling their way around a place. So if they feel a cell which is not saying the right password, they kill it. So if you have a virus infected cell and it's going off, it'll kill it. It'll do all heaps of things. It looks like heaps of different blood cells. I'm trying to think of the word. I really would have to go back and teach this unit first, but of course I would teach it very, very simply, not teach it this high level. So going back, we've got our test tube of the separated blood, and I'm doing this so you can have a mental separation. So you've got the blood cells, and so far we've got in the bottom part these bags full of globulins. And the white blood cell is actually a fully functioning cell. It's got some globulins and it's got lots of proteins and motors. It's like a fully Ferrari cell, a shape-shifting cell with a demoned ability to defend the body. Then above that you have, I think it would be the water layer of the plasma. Now, the plasma now has these little other globulins, which I really want to get onto, and this is where I'll probably finish this pretty quickly because I've been going for a fair while. I can't read how far this is going. Okay, I can't believe I could speak for this long about it because I really know next to nothing about this topic. Getting onto it, that's pretty crazy, that entire hemoglobin having oxygen and carbon dioxide transport method by actually the carbon dioxide is pretty amazing because it makes the water in the red blood cell makes the water dissolve the carbon dioxide really quickly inside it. I'm pretty sure we should be able to use something like that to actually get the carbon dioxide out of our atmosphere. If we can use those enzymes, we can sort of turbocharge the process. That's the life process which absorbs the carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. So we're going up into the through the red blood layer, through the white blood cell layer, through the liquid with this suspension of other globulin particles. And it's those globulin particles which I'm interested in because they're the ones which I've got these special properties related to my heart condition, which I'm sort of interested in, and also they can carry drugs. So if a drug can actually get into that fat layer, in these, I call them fat, they're nothing to do with fat, they're protein liquids. And sort of like milk, these globulins have this colloidal thing that so they don't get too close to each other. If they get close, they repel each other, so they form a suspension. So if you can imagine, if you have all these tennis balls and they repel each other, they'll begin, if you put enough, they'll begin to float upwards, and in it like milk. Oh, well, milk is another area of globulins. There you go. It's their small fat spheres. There's lots of different globulins, but the one which is, I think, the lion's share, over 50%, is the sort of classic globulin called the albumin. If I was teaching class, there'd be lots of jokes, or albumin, etc. But you're all mature out there, you won't laugh at that. Albumin globulin structure. I've just got to think, I don't think that this doesn't have a metal on the inside of it, and it's a single protein. Now, it comes from the egg white. The albumin Latin also means egg white. So albino, that's where the albino white, egg white. And it is indeed exactly the same as egg white. I think there's albumin is the main constituent of egg white. It's a protein out there, basically a protein food. And so it is true that this is the nutrient carrying part of the blood. So you can put actual nutrients itself, but the sort of overall food part of the blood is this albumin, the nourishing part. So if you're malnourished, you have the malnourished people have a low albumin, or people have diseases and accidents, and things are shutting down. The albumin, globulin, the tennis balls in the blood are less. So in your cell, you've got these, in your blood cells, you've got a bag, and it's full of these millions of these little, I think easily thousands, not perhaps not millions, thousands of these little tennis balls. In the plasma, these tennis balls don't have a cell, they're individual proteins, and they float around the place, and they have particular roles. And of course, we'll talk about them getting dirty. So these cells have a thing. You've got kids at the background having a good chat here. So you'll hear, I'm talking in a school at the moment, and these kids are having a good ride around the place. It's reasonably quiet. Getting back to the albumin. So albumin means white. And so they are actually whitish. And if you look at it, and similar to egg white, egg white actually does turn white when you heat it up, and the egg white molecules uncoil, they denurture. So let's what I really want to talk about, I suppose, is the function of the albumin, and I'll talk about how a protein is made. So the function of an albumin is to actually attract water, attract liquid. And so your blood has the amazing ability with this albumin to actually draw water into it. So your heart creates a blood pressure, which is trying to push the blood into the body. And this albumin globular in your blood has the ability to draw water out of your body. So if you have a disease and your albumin is not quite correct, you'll have something called edema. Edema, that is, your tissue swells up with too much liquid, and that's one of the things that's happening with my valve disease. I'll fix my valve up for a second time and I'm swelling up. But it's also true that if you're malnourished, you will not have enough albumin. And so one of these bizarre things is you see these malnourished people that obviously don't have any many muscles, but their body will start to swell. And there's many aspects to it. There's many reasons why blood, your body swells. And after an operation, you'll pick up a lot of liquid because your albumin is not up to scratch. And if you are, so there's ways to actually start to draw out the liquids. It also carries, so this is basically a like water and iron sticky tape, if you'd like to say, or a tennis ball, which is a little bit of like a sponge. It sponges up the water. So it creates another pressure. So you've got a blood pressure, but opposite your blood pressure, and so people with high blood pressure will also swell. It's this having enough albumin pressure. And there's a special name for the type of sort of negative chemical pressure associated with it. So that's a very interesting story for the albumin. And for me, if your drug can stick to your albumin, you can actually take it in your stomach. It goes into the blood, and then the liver, which is a your blood cleaning process. So the liver sort of adjusts, measures the blood, and sort of it's like a whole chemistry factory. So if it sees the toxin sticking to the albumin, it will clean it, and so the toxin will go into the liver, and out your fresh albumin will go there. So your by and large, your drug transport is very much by this very important chemical. Now the albumin is one long protein. And I want to get into a little bit about how proteins are made. And before we go too far, I'll, for the people studying chemistry, talk about a chemical reaction which people are very familiar with, perhaps not everyone. And this is between a an alcohol, you can have various alcohols and a acid, carbolic acid. Now, firstly, let's say what we mean in chemistry by alcohol. Alcohol is any hydrocarbon which has a hydrogen removed and an OH put instead. So you can, if you imagine you break off the hydrogen bond and then replace that gap with the bond of a OH, an OH. The OH is equivalent. Hello, g'day. You want me to go driving, do you? I'll have to go off. I'll finish this later on talking about blood.